This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. The connection between mental trauma and creativity has long fueled great works of art. And the idea of the wounded creator lends an artist a certain mysterious cachet. So what happens when an artist seeks healing through psychotherapy and untangles the web that weaves pain and passion together? Lucy Daniels has been exploring this question for decades. She grew up the unhappy daughter of Raleigh's prominent Daniels family, owners of the News and Observer newspaper. She wrote a best-selling novel before she was 25 years old, but she continued to suffer with the wounds of her childhood. In a new documentary titled Breakthrough, Lucy and seven other artists recount their productive experiences with psychoanalysis. The film is sponsored by the Lucy Daniels Foundation, and Lucy Daniels is with me right now. Welcome to the program. It's good to have
you. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you here. You had an unhappy childhood. Tell us about that.
Well, I didn't really know that it was unhappy, but I was kept out in a yard as a small child all by myself in the summers. And my father was writing in his writing room with my mother helping him. And if I wanted to go inside to go to the bathroom, I went to the window, he would get very angry with me. And another thing that happened to me then is my half-sister came and told me when I was four that she wasn't my full sister and that we had different mothers because her mother had died from a baby breaking her open. And the baby had died too, and that my father had put it in there. And so I was afraid. That's how I developed anorexia. I only learned that 60 years later.
You were kept in the backyard just because they were busy? Why were you?
Well, I would stay there. My younger sisters wouldn't, so I was good. But I think I was probably kept there because there was kidnapping done in those years, mm-hmm. and they didn't want us out of the yard.
You were hospitalized eventually for anorexia.
For 5 years.
Tell us about that. And this was 5 years in the 1950s?
Yes, from 1951 until 1955. And the treatment was terrible. I had electric shock and insulin shock, which they later found out killed people. But anyway, the shock tincture makes you forget everything and not be able to think well. So when I got out of the hospital, I felt terrible and didn't tell anybody where I'd been. But at the same time, in the hospital, I used writing to have something to do. You see, the people I was with were all 20 years older than me and insane because they didn't have drugs then. And then I got out of the hospital, and right then was when my book became a bestseller, and I was on the Today Show, and that was a shock.
Your book, Caleb, My Son.
Caleb, My Son.
You were how old?
I was 21.
21 years old, 5 years in a mental institution, and now you're out, and your book is a bestseller, you're on the Today Show.
Right, that's right.
What was that like for you?
It was, and I couldn't tell anybody where I'd been, because that was a very bad place to have been. So it was amazing. And I did not believe the book could be as good as they said it was. It was sold in other countries, too. And then my father insisted that I apply for a Guggenheim. I am the youngest Guggenheim ever. I got it at 22. And that meant I had to write another book. And I wrote it, and it got published by McGraw-Hill. And it was all right, but it wasn't a bestseller. And after that, I decided I was not a writer.
Well, was that a... So you say you decided you were not a writer. Was it that simple, or did the success of the first book, was that a kind of burden, and did it feel even worse that your second book didn't do so well?
Well, I think it felt worse. I think also that it... Actually, I had gotten married and had babies by then, too. And I was supposed to speak at conferences as a writer. And I decided I was only being a writer to please my parents and humiliate myself. And so when they asked me to speak another year, I said, I'm sorry, I'm not a writer.
How about the anorexia? Had that ended by now?
I would say I'm a recovering anorexic today. Mm-hmm. And I would say that in my what I now understand of my unconscious is that the anorexia and then stopping writing were the same issue. That I got anorexia at 12. Now I know I needed to be thin so I wouldn't get a baby put inside me. And then not writing was staying out of the writing room.
So when you realized this, you said you now know this, and that's because of psychoanalysis. When did you decide to seek psychotherapy?
I was a high school dropout, but when I got divorced in my about 40, I went to college so I could support my children, my four children, and then I became got into clinical psychology training, and then I didn't want to be a bad therapist, and because a doctor had told us right after I left the hospital that I couldn't go to UNC unless I had psychoanalysis, which my father didn't let me have, I decided to take that advice then, and I went in psychoanalysis then, and I would say it saved my life.
So was it difficult? You say that now. At the time, was that difficult for you? Was it a difficult decision to make to go into psychotherapy? I mean, for some people, there's a stigma attached, and they don't want to do that.
No, I wanted to go into psychoanalysis because I thought it might make me a better therapist. But I didn't know when I went into psychoanalysis how wonderful it was.
Did it affect your writing?
Well, when I was in, I wasn't a writer then. So when I was about 7 years into my analysis, my analyst starts saying, "What about your writing?" That made me mad because I knew I'd given it up for a good reason. But I kept on. And he kept on, and I kept on, and I got back to trying the writing, and I realized how very important it was to me.
When did you found the Lucy Daniels Foundation?
I founded it in 1989, which was when I was able to get a fair price for my News and Observer stock.
And what was behind that? What was your mission?
Well, what I wanted to help other people who were creative, be able to have the same kind of help from psychoanalysis that I had had. And I wanted to follow this in research, which is what we did. And we have data from that, from eight creative writers, which we have given to Emory University, where it's being analyzed now.
And the particular emphasis on artists, why?
We dealt in our research with creative writers, just because you can't help it so much in that. But any kind of creativity, I think people have to use their inner selves. And that, of course, is what you get into in psychoanalysis.
So psychoanalysis can help you get to those places that can perhaps open creativity. But then there's this other problem that many creative people have, the fear that if they release their demon, the muse goes with it.
Hopefully what I've done will help people change that, because I talk about two mirrors. One mirror is your work, and you can see yourself in your work. Another mirror is your dreams, and if you have problems in your work, you may see the reasons for them in your dreams.
Well, we have a bit of the film today, and one of the other artists who's featured in the film. The film is called Breakthrough, and this is Anne McCoy. She's a recovering alcoholic and a visual artist, and here she's talking about beginning psychoanalysis.
I was having to deal with the sobriety plus the analysis, but this man was very sympathetic, very supportive, and I had an enormous breakthrough in my work. My work before that had been very rigid little sculptures, and when I got into psychoanalysis with this man, it was as though the unconscious just opened up to me. I started drawing 14-foot-high waterfalls, and I was also crying every day because I was in such a state of grief, I think, or just opening up to feelings. I'd been completely shut down.
Now, it's interesting because the artists in this film were all artists before they went into psychoanalysis. They were producing some pretty good work, and they were aware of the fact that they had these demons in their past and probably were working them out through their art. So there's this sense that, well, I better not tamper with that, because mm-hmm. that's the source of my genius.
Yes, but then they found out it's about the two mirrors, and they could see the problems that in themselves, and by working with those, they could make their work even better.
And that's the interesting thing, that it doesn't just go away.
No.
That in fact, there's even a deeper well of broader creativity.
That's right. You have more freedom, psychological freedom in your work and in your life.
What was it about these stories that interested you? Certainly you had your own story to tell. What was interesting about these other stories for you?
I just find it's so interesting and enriching to talk to people about what's going on in their life, and you can see it in their work. If you hear the story, then you can hear, you can see it in the work. And it, I also, I have this seminar which I call "Our Problems as the Roots of Our Power" that I've taught for, I held for about, I don't know, 20 years. And when people get together talking about that, it's very exciting.
That's the other thing. This is not about denial. So these problems, this grief, and I think the word came up all eight times and with all eight of the subject to this film, it's not that the grief goes away or not that it's not the source of your work, but that you now have better access.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And psychoanalysis itself has changed along over the years, too. It is very broad. There's all different kinds of it, aren't there?
Yes. Well, and also different people need different things. And what you can see in the artists in the film is that different ones did it differently. And the doctors were able to do it the way the patient needed it to be done.
Yeah, each of them talks about the fact that they weren't given any kind of advice. It was simply a non-judgmental practitioner who allowed them to go find the place and just provided that safe space.
Exactly.
How did you find the artists who are in this film?
Well, you know, for people in my seminar ended up doing programs in New York City and in California. And in the process, we bumped into artists who came to see this. And then they started talking to us about their own lives and their own work. And we just had a community.
You know, in a sense, our artists, I was watching this film thinking they might have an advantage over the rest of us in that through their art, through the art that they had already before analysis, they had some inkling that there was another inner life that was strong, robust, and perhaps a little dysfunctional. For people who aren't in that world with representations, with dreams that are vivid, we don't always know that there are these skeletons rattling about creating these troubles for us.
I think you're absolutely right. And artists also are used to using the inner, showing it. They may not know to talk about it right away, but they show it in their work. And then when they can talk about it, it's fine.
You are used to telling your story. You're very open about it. But now this film is going to screen at the Rialto, and you're going to be in a room full of strangers with your story and seven others on the screen. Have you thought about that? How are you going to feel when that happens?
Well, I'm kind of concerned a little bit. Is it going to remind me of when I just got out of the hospital when I was 21? But then I had to keep it all secret, and now everything's out there, so I'll have to find out.
You have to find out. Well, you can find out with her. The film Breakthrough screens Thursday night at 7 o'clock, the Rialto Theater in Raleigh. Lucy Daniels, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Lucy Daniels is a clinical psychologist and writer, the founder of the Lucy Daniels Center for Early Childhood and the Lucy Daniels Foundation. Film Breakthrough once again screens Thursday night, 7 o'clock, Rialto Theater in Raleigh. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. If you have a comment about the show or want to hear an archived edition, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.